Morning, Chief Judge Erdman, judges. May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Stevens. And I'm
Could you speak up?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You may want to pull that down a little bit. And then
it's not adjusted for my short height. May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Stevens, and I represent the appellant, Quantaeus Riggins, in this case, along with Lieutenant Austria of the Navy Marine Corps Appellate Defense Division. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
In the 2010 case of United States v. Jones, 48 MJ 465, this court restated the principle that an accused at trial is entitled to notice of the offense and the legal theory under which they might be convicted. They also stated that to be on notice of a lesser-included offense, that it had to be a subset of the greater offense, the elements test under Schmuck, which was referenced by the court. And in this case, the appellant, Mr. Riggins, was charged with 4 specifications of abuse of sexual contact and 2 specifications of sexual assault by placing the alleged victim in fear that he would affect her career. He was found guilty of 3 of the 4 specifications of abuse of sexual contact and, he was found not guilty of those, but guilty of the lesser included offense of assault consummated by a battery, and not guilty of the sexual assault, but guilty of, again, 2 more specifications of assault consummated by a battery. The charged offenses of sexual assault involved a sexual act that had to be accomplished by placing the alleged victim in fear. The consent of the victim is not an element of that of those offenses. The force is not an element of those offenses. The abuse of sexual contact charges that the appellant was charged with also do not contain an element of consent or an element of force that may be applied. In fact, the offense of abuse of sexual contact has greater latitude in how it may be accomplished. In fact, the victim may apply force to the perpetrator, that they may be caused to perform a sexual act. And those are 2 principal differences between the charged offenses and the offenses that the military judge in this case found appellant guilty of, the assaults consummated by battery. Those require bodily harm to be inflicted, an offensive touching. And implicit in the offensive touching is that it's without the consent of the alleged victim. And because those have different elements, they are they do not meet the elements test, and they are not a subset of the greater offense.
Are you still arguing it's not an LIO as a matter of law, or are you simply arguing notice, or are you arguing both?
I'm arguing both, Your Honor. First, it's not an LIO as a matter of law for this legal theory of sexual assault and abuse of sexual contact. Appellant's not arguing that under B1B, which involves sexual assault by causing bodily harm, or the corresponding abuse of sexual contact by causing bodily harm. Under those theories, we are not arguing that an LIO might not be appropriate under that legal theory. But that's not the legal theory under which the appellant in this case was charged. He was charged with committing these acts and contact by placing the alleged victim in fear. And although fear has a definition that's included with Article 120 by saying a victim cannot consent when they're placed in fear, it's not an element of the offense. The drafters have put kind of a double negative in there, Your Honor. They have not only have they not included a lack of consent, pardon the double negative, but they've also closed the doors after they've shooed consent out of the room by saying not only is lack of consent not an element to these offenses, but being placed in fear means you can't consent. And not only that, being placed in fear means you don't have to manifest a lack of consent. So the drafters appear to do everything possible to remove the notion of consent from that element. And that adds to the argument that the assault consummated by battery, as a matter of law, is not a lesser-included offense for this legal theory, Your Honor.
You're losing me.
I apologize.
Yeah, Your Honor. If you're placed in fear, you can't consent.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. But as a matter of law.
The lack of consent is not an element of the offense. An element is something the government would have to prove. And for this offense, the government, under no circumstance, the way it's charged, have to prove lack of consent.
But they have to prove fear.
They have to prove fear.
Right.
And correspondingly, fear is the only thing that appellant had to defend against. The actions clearly happened. There was no argument that the act and the contact happened. The issue at trial was whether the alleged victim was placed in fear. And as a matter of notice, Your Honor, not having notice of the LIOs, potential LIOs of assault consummated by a battery, the accused at trial wouldn't have the opportunity to avail himself of defenses that he might raise if he knew that he was charged with assault consummated by battery. For instance, a mistake of fact as to consent and arguing against actual consent. The definitions of under Article 120 make consent irrelevant. If he's told he can't, that if you're placed in fear, you can't consent, then there's no benefit from challenging consent, only placing the person in fear, Your Honor.
What about the element of unlawful force or violent in assault consummated by a battery? You haven't really argued that too much other than to mention it. And how does that play into that? And is that a better argument than the consent issue for you? Or where does it fit in?
Your Honor, if I understand the court's question to be, is it about the Article 128?
Yeah, Article 128 has the element of unlawful force and violence.
Yes, sir. An unlawful force or violence there is an issue dealing with force, as I mentioned at the beginning of the argument, Your Honor, as to how force may be applied, since under this language of abusive sexual contact, force does not have to be applied at all, that the person can cause a sexual contact by the alleged victim, and that would suffice for the offense. And if I could illustrate, Your Honor, Specification 3 of the additional charge in this case shows an example of that, where the accused was charged with causing the alleged victim to place her hand up on his penis. Clearly, there's no force exerted by the appellant in that case. However, had the government been able to prove the victim was placed in fear, it appears that he would have been found guilty of that offense.
Isn't that type of touching covered by the first element of 128, which is the accused did bodily harm to a certain person, and bodily harm in 128 is defined as any offensive touching of another, however slight, which to me is different than the second element, which is unlawful force or violence.
Your Honor, there has to be some kind of force or violence. The perpetrator, the accused, has to somehow use force to, it could be through an intermediary, but he or she has to actually exert force for the unlawful force or violence, Your Honor, under an Article 128 offense, such as tipping a hat or pushing a third party into their victim or throwing something into a crowd. They have to do the actus.
I just want to make sure I understand. It's your theory that is not found in the Article 120 offenses?
Not in the Article 120 B1A as charged, Your Honor. We are not arguing that that's not present in B1B, which does allege a sexual act by bodily harm.
But for purposes of this case, it wasn't charged.
Right, Your Honor. And again, since there was a different legal theory there, we understand under the ruling of U.S. v. Jones that under certain circumstances, and U.S. v. Wilkins, that under certain circumstances, a lesser offense may be a lesser included offense, but not another circumstance. And this is one of those where, under the legal theory of being placed in fear, bodily harm is irrelevant. And consent is irrelevant because it's been taken out. This can also be illustrated by looking at B1B, bodily harm. If being placed in fear is the same as, and then some kind of sexual act, if that's the same as bodily harm, then there'd be no reason for a distinction between B1A and B1B. They would mean the same thing. You just drop down and see a definition that says, by the way, being placed in fear, you can't consent. But that's not what the drafters did. They separated out this notion of an act or contact by being placed in fear and the act or contact by inflicting bodily harm. And by separating them out, they must have intended something else. And as the court noted it in Jones, the history of the 2007 revision of Article 120 indicated an intent by the drafters to reduce as much as possible the notion of the mindset of the alleged victim. Understand that this is a different version of Article 120 that we're dealing with today, but the argument is still the same, that it does appear in the plain language of Article 120 that they've attempted to take away consent as much as possible. Everything seems to eliminate the whole notion of consent. And as a negative, it can't be an element. To say that lack of consent that if you're placed in fear, you can't consent, doesn't mean the same as it's an element you now don't have to prove. It's never listed as an element for anything but B1B, which is the bodily harm version, Your Honor. And again, I know that it may be a little bit confusing to look at the difference between the matter of law as far as a lesser included offense and notice, but we do feel, or excuse me, we are arguing both that the that as a matter of law, under this legal theory, under Article 120 offenses of B1A of placing in fear and the abusive sexual contact by placing in fear, that these are not, as a matter of law, lesser included offense. And as a matter of notice, again, the accused in this case, appellant Mr. Riggins, would have had the opportunity to put forth a defense of consent or an affirmative defense of reasonable mistake of fact as to consent had he known that he would be defending against not only the charged offenses but the lesser included offense of assault consummated by a battery.
Well, why couldn't he put forward a defense of consent? Because that would negate the fear.
In certain circumstances, Your Honor, it might have, but
if she consented, presumably she wasn't in fear.
Yes, Your Honor, but there might be a situation, and the facts of this case seem to bear that out, where the person could say they were in fear, and yet there is some evidence of agreement, where a person would still be guilty of the 120 charges by placing in fear. In this case, I would characterize this as reluctant agreement. There is a long recording by the alleged victim in the case where at different times she says she doesn't want to engage in sexual acts because she doesn't want to hurt her husband or she doesn't want to get in trouble at work. But there's a question of actual consent. That's not relevant for determining whether he violated the 120 offenses. All he would have to show is he never made a threat against her career. He never implied a threat. And that's the...
No, but he had the power. And in other cases, and in cases, for instance, involving children, we've implied that. Now, this is a different sort of case. But it is a case where he's an E6, and I think she's an E3, and she knows he's got substantial power over her by virtue of that. So how's that factor in?
Your Honor, you are correct that that there's some indication that he had power and influence over the alleged victim in the case. However, the military judge did make special findings where he stated that he found there was no fear, and that's because there was no threat, no communication, or even an implicit threat about action he could have taken against the alleged victim. And Your Honor is also correct that in certain circumstances, disproving the element of fear might also disprove an element of lack of consent. However, that wouldn't necessarily always be the case, and nor would it be required to defeat an Article 120 charge, except as noted under the B1B bodily harm legal theory. Now, if there are no further questions as to notice and the lesser includes offenses as a matter of law, we'd like to turn our argument to prejudice suffered by the appellant in this case. As I noted, Your Honor, the appellant did not get to present arguments about the alleged consent of the victim or a reasonable mistake of fact that he might have as to her consent. Had he known he might have to go forward to defend against assault consummated by battery, he might have testified in his own defense and put on that reasonable mistake of fact defense. However, The defense believed they'd sufficiently defeated an allegation of that the victim had been placed in fear, and that wasn't necessary. Additionally, the lesser included offenses to which the appellant was found guilty added substantially to his punitive exposure in this case. He had pled guilty to a sexual harassment orders violation, to a adultery and false official statement. He was also found guilty of an indecent communication. And however, all these offenses, while they carry more than 10 years of potential confinement, realistically, they don't tend to get the kind of confinement that this appellant got. He received 3 years of confinement, and the military judge's ruling when he considered an unreasonable multiplication of charges motion by the Civilian Defense Council after findings seems to support that he considered each one of these acts independently and that they added substantially to the confinement that the appellant received in this case. If there are no further questions from the court, this concludes my argument.
Well, counsel, I just have one again. You talk about him not being prepared to address the issue of consent based on what was charged. But again, you didn't mention he didn't have the opportunity to address unlawful force or violence. And I'm just wondering if you don't think that's as strong an argument that you're putting forth with the consent issue.
Your Honor, other than Specification 3, which alleged that the appellant caused the alleged victim to have sexual contact with him, the commission of a sexual act or sexual contact by the appellant, unless he alleged that it was somehow inadvertent, would amount to unlawful force and violence if it was an offensive touching and done without her consent. So it does not appear that, other than Specification 3, that there was a sufficient argument that might be made. If the touching was offensive, if the alleged victim didn't consent, there's no question that it would be through unlawful force or violence because it was without legal excuse or justification. So, again, if he was defending against Specification 3, he would argue that issue on unlawful force and violence to say there was no force at all used because the Your Honor, he could have alleged that there was no force at all involved. And if the facts as they played out had shown that during the commission of different touching, the alleged victim did all the action, he is charged with placing his lips on the alleged victim's breast. If the facts had shown that instead she put her breast to his lips, again, he could argue, if he knew he was charged with assault consummated by battery, that she used all the force and he took no action. However, under Article 120, if the government proved fear, he would still be found guilty of that offense. Does that answer the court's question, Your Honor?
It does. Thank you.
And again, if there are no further questions from the court, this completes my argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Also for the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman. May it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Amy Frymuth, and with Mr. Brian Keller, we represent the United States in this matter. This court can affirm the lower court's opinion for two reasons. First, Article 120 states that a person under fear cannot consent. The statute itself put appellant on notice that he had to defend against the lesser included offense.
Not effectively consent, just as a drunk person cannot consent even if she's saying yes.
Yes, Your Honor, but Congress has made it very clear that as a legal effect, if the government proves beyond a reasonable doubt that the victim was placed in fear, then they have proven lack of consent. And it's contained within the statutory scheme, putting the appellant on notice that under the statute, he has to defend against, at a minimum, an offensive touching done with unlawful force or violence, meaning that there's no no consent or justification for the touching. Now, appellant has conceded that the sexual acts did happen in this case, so we're not really talking about the first element when we're comparing assault consummated by a battery with the charged offenses. Both require that there's a touching. In 128 requires a sexual touching in nature, and 128 does not include such a limitation. Second, that the touching has to be done intentionally, but the element here is the second element of both offenses. Under the 120 offenses charged, it would be placing the victim in fear. Now, Congress has said in the consent instruction in 8B that a person placed in fear cannot consent. So by just looking at the statute itself, appellant knows and is on notice that he has to defend against, at a base minimum, assault consummated by a battery, which is an offensive touching with no legal justification. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Therefore, the appellant was on notice just based on the statutory language. Second, appellant was not prejudiced under the court finding him guilty of assault consummated by a battery because the record demonstrates that he was on notice to defend against a non-consensual touching, and he did so defend, putting on a defense that the victim consented, that she agreed to the sexual act prior in a previous conversation, and that which is recorded on in Joint Appendix 104, which is the audio recording, and that he, in his opening and closing, both reference, and not to be crude, in page 310, she spread her legs and got leverage, meaning that she did this herself, she consented. So, in fact, contrary to what appellant has stated, he did put on a defense of consent, that she did consent. And although consent is not an element of strictly looking at the text, it is implicitly an element of the second element under abusive sexual contact and sexual assault as charged by the language the court used, by the language Congress used in defining consent and looking at the whole statutory scheme. So by law, appellant is on notice under Article 79 that he must defend on any lesser included offense. That is as
charged, right?
Yes, that is as charged.
It doesn't say anything for consenting. It's just saying the reason she consented is because she feared that if she didn't, he would hurt her military career.
Yes, Your Honor, that is what it says.
So, as a matter of law, that consent isn't valid.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how does that put him on notice that he has to show that she didn't consent at all, that she didn't say yes, that she said no?
Your Honor,
she didn't agree for any reason, as opposed to agreed for a bad reason, i.e. she was fearful that he would hurt her military career.
Your Honor, as charged and looking at the elements, it puts him on notice, as I've stated before, the statutory scheme as a whole, and appellant categorized this encounter as reluctant agreeance. So he's put on notice that the use of rank to effectuate the sexual touching, to effectuate the lack of consent, to make consent, to overcome her consent, it puts him on notice that at base minimum, he's going to have to defend against a touching where there's no legal justification for an offensive touching. And that is clearly within Article 128. And by the statutory language itself, it is an LAO based on the test this court has adopted through Teeters, Jones, and Alston, saying that you don't need a word-for-word comparison of the two statutes. They don't need to be exact. But the alleged lesser-included offense, in this case, assault consummated by a battery, is a subset of the greater offense. It is necessarily included. And this court in Alston said that you employ the plain and ordinary meanings of the words using normal statutory construction. And here, assault consummated by a battery is a subset of the charged offenses, and the appellant was on notice purely based on the statute.
Where in the specifications that he was convicted of do you find the second element of assault consummated by a battery, that of unlawful force or violence? And I'm trying to determine what the difference is here between the bodily harm that we have in the first element, which is an offensive touching, and the bodily harm was done with unlawful force and violence in the second element.
Your Honor, to answer your first question about where in the specification you link up the second element of the charge offense, and I will address that first, looking to, by placing her in fear of using her military rank, that it would affect her military career. And then you look back to the statute, and that puts the appellant on notice that if the government proves beyond a reasonable doubt that fear, that the accused did effectuate the fear necessary to overcome the consent, that puts them on notice that it is a situation where there is a potential for non-consensual activity. How did the consent, how did the consent get overcome as charged here? But at the base level, you're still dealing with a situation in where a bodily harm was done, an offensive touching was done, and it was over the consent of that person. And this court in Arriaga said just because there's alternate means of proving that lesser included offense, meaning that she just didn't consent, a myriad of other reasons, doesn't mean that it still can't be a lesser included offense of the more specific reason.
So are you arguing that the unlawful portion of the force and violence is the fact that she did not consent?
And yes, Your Honor, this court and Bonner pointed out that unlawful force or violence can mean there's no legal justification for the touching. Bodily harm is an offensive touching, however slight, can also deal with situations where the touching was done without the consent of the person.
So really the consent issue is the primary issue here?
Yes, Your Honor. That is, the consent issue is the primary issue. And the appellant was on notice through the fact that it's an LIO statutorily, but further through the charge sheet itself, and he was not prejudiced under Article 59A because the record as a whole demonstrates that he defended against this offensive touching and that he was on notice that there's a situation that occurred where the victim did not want it to happen. Prosecution Exhibit 7 is riddled with the victim crying, saying she didn't want to do it. I'm married, I love my husband. There's a transcript of that immediately following in the joint appendix for ease of reference.
But what does all of that have to do with our analysis as to the elements? Don't we look at what the elements are in the manual and then look at the language that they were charged with and determine whether or not 128 is a subset of these two or of the 120 offenses that were charged?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe I was jumping forward to the prejudice, but to answer your question, the government is asking you to do exactly that. And when you do that, you will see that it is a lesser included offense based on the evidence and looking at the elements, not evidence, and looking at the statutory scheme as a whole, looking at the entirety of the statute. And that's exactly what the lower court did, and that's, that was the right application of the elements test as this court has used in Jones and Alston. The court didn't err, and this court can affirm by law, by the elements themselves, that this is a lesser included offense. And therefore, the appellant was not prejudiced when the military judge convicted him of the five specifications because he was on notice based on the pure text of the statute. If there is no further questions, this concludes the government's argument.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Your Honor, as the court noted, the issue of whether the evidence in the case supported the elements of lesser included offense is irrelevant for determination of whether the LIO was appropriate in the elements test. It is something that we discussed for prejudice and for prejudice, the appellant maintains that he would have defended the case differently had he been aware that he might be charged and convicted of assault consummated by battery.
Well, isn't it a little hard to maintain consent? Oh, sorry about that. Hard to maintain consent or argue consent when you've got a tape recording of her saying, no, 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 no.
Your Honor, while it may sound inappropriate.
I mean, I'm not saying he can. He can argue anything he wants to.
Well, it may be politically incorrect, but as practitioners, there are times where no doesn't mean no, especially if there are indications that the person did consent. And in this case, there are actions taken by the alleged victim, and there are indications that she made that she
nonverbal action.
Well, not just nonverbal, Your Honor. Okay. There are things that are captured in the audio recording that's attached to the joint appendix as appellate exhibit 35, I believe, Your Honor, where the alleged victim says things like, "Do you have a condom with you? If I do this, can I have a day off?" Where it seems to be some form of negotiation. And again, this at least makes consent an issue that could have been explored, but not in defending of the Article 120 charges, where placing in fear is the only issue. And, Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I believe that concludes my rebuttal argument.
Okay. Thank you, Counsel. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.